Welcome to Beanball Podcast, Episode 16. I am your host, Jason Wojciechowski, coming to you from Beanball Studios in Los Angeles. It is Monday, July 16th, and I have my very first guest on the Beanball Podcast, Mark Normandin. So let's just get right into it. Okay, so this is Mark Normandin. Mark Normandin writes for Over the Monster. He writes for Baseball Nation on SBN. Where else do you write, Mark?
I write for Fake Teams, which is also part of SBN.
That's the fantasy side of SBN, right?
Yes, it is.
It is. And you write, more or less? Well, you write every day. You write lots of stuff every day, but you write it at Baseball Nation, because that's the one that I read. So you do write at Baseball Nation, what do you write, three times a week, every day?
Three times a week.
And they're very good, so my three listeners should definitely be reading. I mean, you should be reading really almost the whole site, but particularly Grant, and I think Jeff Sullivan, and then also particularly Mark.
Thanks for throwing that in at the end there. But, I mean, I'm so much less effort to keep up with because I'm only the three times.
Right, exactly. And sometimes those other guys write multiple times a day, and it's just, you know, you just have to stare at the GIFs for a while. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot more percentage signs in your writing.
I don't use percentage signs.
You don't use the sign. You write out the word. But I'm trying to make, a sort of point here, and you're just undermining the point.
So am I.
So, okay, so that's where you write, and Over the Monster, for those who don't know, is SBN's Red Sox site, and so I'm going to ask you about the Red Sox, and the first question I have about the Red Sox is, how does it feel to be a Red Sox fan looking up at the A's in the standings post-All-Star break?
Oh, they're behind the A's in the standings?
They are. One game. The A's, by virtue of sweeping the Twins, have moved up, I think, to, 46 and 43 or something like that, and the Red Sox are around 45 and 44. So I think it's a one game lead. So obviously you're feeling very upset about this, I can tell.
This is devastating, I guess. Right? Is that the right feeling?
Devastating is probably about right.
Okay. Yeah, I'm devastated. Was that too much? Should we do that again?
We could do it again, but probably won't edit it out.
Yeah, I mean, I actually wrote today about the trade deadline at Over the Monster, and this feeds into what you just asked me. I think I wrote the big boring one, the big boring trade deadline thing. We had all of our authors take a day and kind of write, you know, this big sweeping what would you do as GM thing. And mine was kind of, I wouldn't really do much because, you know, there's this and this and this going on and there's all these excuses that are legitimate for why they're where they are. And yeah, they're looking up at the A's in the standings, but I don't know. Let's see at the end of the year, you know, unless the A's get their own Jacoby Ellsbury and Carl Crawford and Andrew Bailey. Oh, well, they had one of those back in the next, you know, 2-3 weeks. They're probably not going to keep up with the Sox in the standings.
I don't know what you think Dan Straley is, but he's obviously going to be worth at least as much as Jacoby Ellsbury is over the rest of the year. Are you familiar with Dan Straley? I don't even know if most A's fans are familiar with Dan Straley at this point.
I do not. There's so many, like, random athletics players that I learn, you know, eventually, yeah. But
they'll get traded to the Red Sox at some point.
I haven't ventured to the Baseball Reference page and had him pop out at me just yet. I'm still getting used to the whole, like, Travis Blackley and A.J. Griffin and what's his name? Doolittle and who's the closer now?
Ryan Cook. All-star.
Yeah, that's
sorry.
Right. See, I thought his name was Ryan.
All-star Ryan Cook.
I thought his name was Ryan Cook, and then I didn't believe myself and thought it might be Sean Cook, and then I just wasn't sure anymore.
Wasn't it the mutiny on the bounty? Wasn't that Captain Cook? I think it might have been.
Was his name Ryan or Sean?
I think his name was Ryan Sean Cook.
Right. Oh, yeah. See, well, now that's just easy to remember.
Right. So the A's bullpen will eventually mutiny against their closer. Not unlike how the A's bullpen mutinied against Bob Guerin last year. So that's a little callback, which I'm always bitter about. So but I guess the question, I didn't read the piece yet. I haven't gotten my Red Sox folder, my Google Reader yet. But you think that the Red Sox are good enough to get to the playoffs with the players they have coming back, not so much that you don't think it's worth, or is it also just you don't think it's worth selling any of the future pieces, you know, some of that, particularly in the lower levels of the farm system, are just top-notch right now. You don't think it's worth selling those pieces for whatever advantages at, I don't know, wherever the weaknesses are in the starting rotation, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if they can get, say, Ryan Dempster, who they're supposedly looking at, and I wrote this earlier in the day before that was supposedly a thing. I was just kind of pulling out a name that I thought fit. I don't want to act like I have any super inside knowledge that I didn't have. Or maybe I guess I should pretend I did. Dempster's a guy who probably won't cost them one of, like, the top 100 prospect types. You know, the kind of guys you want to hold on to. The Garza, Greinke, Hamels, those guys are going to be expensive if the Sox got them. And I don't want to do anything that huge. So I'd rather, you know, get a Dempster or nothing as far as the rotation goes. You know, they've got a 6-man rotation right now. They're going to pare it down to 5 in the next week or two. So then they'll still have some depth. And, Dice K as a starter in the regular rotation, maybe not a great thing. But if he's like the 7th or 8th option you have in the organization, you're probably doing okay.
Do you think Dempster will be that cheap? You think Dempster will be...
I don't think he's going to cost nothing, but, you know, he's got some money left in his deal. Not a huge amount, but he's got some money left. The Cubs say they'll eat it to get better prospects, but he is a 2-month rental. You know, there is nothing else for this deal. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see how the market reacts with the new collective bargaining agreement, not being able to get compensation picks for Dempster, where someone is just paying, you know, for this rental. And yeah, he's been great, but in 2012, but, you know, he's an above average starting pitcher who's very durable. And that's probably what someone's trading for more than the guy who has a sub-2 ERA and hasn't allowed a run in, like, 5 starts or whatever it is at right now.
And he's not a guy like with Cole Hamels where you're maybe hoping to give yourself an inside track on a 5-year deal re-signing, I guess. How old did you say how old he was? I don't remember.
I think Dempster is maybe 34 or 35. You know,
he's even that young. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so he's hoping for, like, a 2-year deal.
Yeah, you know, he comes out of this and he'll go probably not even with the team that traded for him. So, you know, who knows? We'll see.
Well, I've been the one all along on the A's saying, you know, they should still be looking to trade Johnny Gomes. Do you need a Johnny Gomes? We have a Johnny Gomes.
No, the Sox actually have too many outfielders. They're probably – do you want Ryan Sweeney back?
Well, Gomes is more of a DH if you've seen him in the outfield. He can platoon with David Ortiz. There, Gomes the righty, Ortiz the lefty.
I think Ortiz probably hits lefties better than Johnny Gomes does at this point.
That's probably fair.
And that's not even meant as offense to Gomes. It's just I don't know what David's been doing, but lefties are not pleased with it.
The interesting thing actually about the A's is the serious one would be like a Brandon McCarthy, who it might be in the Red Sox range, you know, in terms of being a 1-year rental, probably not that expensive, although for different reasons than Dempster, because he's, you know, you just don't know if he's going to stay in the rotation, stay healthy. But sort of a combination of him having been on the DL twice already and the A's somehow getting into the playoff race makes it, I wonder if they're even going to trade him. And I wonder if they can take the sort of media hit, the fan hit, things like that. Because as much as, you know, they traded Trevor Cahill, so they're not susceptible to that. I mean, that's getting Jared Parker back. So I don't know if the Brandon McCarthy deal, as much as I would like to see it happen in a certain sense. I mean, I think I'd also like to see him on the A's for the next 3 years. Is McCarthy, do you think, someone you've thought about?
I actually considered putting him in to the piece today as someone they might be able to afford, but because he's been on the DL and the Red Sox have enough problems with injuries anyway, and you know they've got such a loaded 40-man roster because of injury issues, it's kind of tough to justify adding a guy who might end up being hurt, especially coming off of last year where, you know, they acquired Bedard and then he didn't give them nearly as many innings as they thought. You know, one more Bedard start in the entire season, we might not have any September collapse stories.
Yeah,
so
you could have had Harden. All you had to do was ignore the medicals. You could have had Harden.
Oh, I guess the story behind that was, you know, they were fine with the normal, yeah, we know Rich Harden only has half of a pitcher's ligaments left. That's okay. But then, you know, whatever report they saw showed that there were even more problems than had, you know, were public. And they were like, whoa, never mind. The player to be named later that they pulled back, and that's the reason that the A's balked at the follow-up trade offer. The A's ended up getting in the Andrew Bailey deal. So
I've actually wondered about that because you must have said it publicly somewhere else before this, that, you know, because I have wondered whether one of those three players was the sort of mystery player in the Harden deal, which I believe you mentioned when I was on your podcast at some point, you know, that like, okay, Lars Anderson, but there's this other player that would have been coming back with this deal that you would have been much more excited about.
And yeah, I mean, essentially the Sox said, well, if this is the Harden we're getting, then you can have just Lars Anderson.
Yeah.
And the A's were like, well, we're going to go get whoever it will, Brandon Allen, who you know, they've already disposed of.
Right, because that's what a team does with Brandon Allen, is you don't you don't wait around for him to keep having an on-base percentage of 290 or whatever it was. Yeah, somebody said to me, I don't remember who it was, but somebody said to me something about the A's doing pretty well developing these kind of quad A first basemen. I'm like, oh, like the way they developed Brandon Allen and Kealakai Hui and Eric Barton? Like,
More like hoarding.
True. Yeah, they did. That was coming into the year. It was Barton, Kahui, Allen. They still had Chris Carter, and I feel like there was one more, but I guess Brandon Moss kind of counts now that he was like, there's too many outfielders. I have to move to first base so I have a chance to break through. And somehow that worked despite this sort of massive number of first basemen. But the Moss Carter platoon is
That's what Lars Anderson's trying to do, the opposite, where he is now playing left field.
Well, that's the typical path, right? The guy who's stuck at first and he's got, you know, people in front of him.
I mean, he can play first, though. You know, a lot of the guys who move to left maybe aren't good first basemen, but Lars is actually a decent glove at first. It was just kind of a crap, I have nowhere left to go. And he was really excited to be traded from Boston for 5 minutes last year.
The A's might have been a slightly better fit. I mean, I actually wonder,
I wonder if they would have
made room for him, or if they would have basically treated him like, I mean, maybe they wouldn't have, because Kahui, I think they got off of waivers, and maybe they just don't make that move. And so Lars Anderson ends up in the Kahui kind of spot, and he's just, you know, playing part-time with Allen and Barton also in the mix, and then he eventually ends up released like everybody else.
But then he'd be free.
He could sign with the Pirates and like they all do, or the Rays, as Brandon Allen did. Or I think the Rays might have claimed Allen actually on waivers, not
and then released him.
Yeah, Allen's not a big leaguer. Speaking of not a big leaguer, here comes a segue. How about all those retired baseball players in that book
were big leaguers.
But they're not anymore. Except for Tony Phillips. Tony Phillips could definitely come back and play in the major leagues right now.
He's a perpetual big leaguer.
So tell me about the book.
So the book
happened to have some connection to.
The book is The Hall of Nearly Great. It's an ebook that we've done, as Jason knows, because Jason wrote in it and helped edit, or edited. I guess he didn't really.
I think helped edit. I think is.
Yeah, do you want to do that?
I did commas, you know, commas and style guide stuff.
Well, Jason edited. Was part of an editing team. We had uniforms. Jason had a cape. I'm not really sure what that was about.
The cats like to kind of bat at the cape while I was editing.
It's a look at, you know, the kind of phrase we've been using is players, to celebrate players who, you know, are no longer celebrated or won't have their chance at being celebrated. You know, we didn't want to make a book out of, you know, giant arguments for getting guys into the Hall of Fame, or, you know, just trying to convince everyone that this player, so-and-so, belongs in the Hall of Fame. We wanted to look at these guys for what they were and appreciate them for what they were instead of focusing on what they weren't or trying to argue them to some higher position, you know, historically. We just wanted people to know them and remember them. So we ended up getting over 40 authors on this. Sky Cochman was the other brainchild for this. You know, it's kind of ridiculous how many people actually said yes, first of all, because, you know, we had a list of everyone we wanted to ask and we expected a lot of no's, but everyone seemed pretty enthused about this. And I think a lot of the passion people showed just accepting to help on this transferred to their work. And, you know, obviously I'm biased because it's, you know, a project that's got my name on it, but I really think that a lot of the work in here is great, point where it kind of intimidated me on the essays I was doing.
So you have to name some names.
You should name some names. You're hosting.
No, but I don't. But it's your book, so I don't actually.
Let's go back and forth.
I'm playing the interviewer here, where I don't actually know anything about your project, and you're promoting the project that I am you know, learning about.
All right, so we've got a bunch of people in there from various parts of the internet. Not all of them are even baseball writers. You know, I still think they did a great job, and they had passion for the players that they were writing about specifically. You know, maybe not a baseball writer, but they're a baseball fan who's also a writer, and it resulted in some really great work. But we've got guys like Joe Posnanski and Rob Nyer, King Kaufman, Will Leach, John Boyes, Grant Brisby. I don't want to throw myself in with those guys at all, because...
Well, but you're naming the SBN group, so the Boyes, Brisby, Normandin, triumvirate.
Yeah, there we go. Did I say Rob Nyer? Rob Nyer.
You did say Rob Nyer. But he belongs in multiple triumvirates. He belongs
also,
his essay
was lengthy, so we're naming it
and
twice.
It was one of the few that was about a player from before, like, 1965.
Yeah, there were. I think that's a lot of people pick players that they either, you know, they were very familiar with for one reason or another, whether they caught them at the tail end of their career, or saw the whole thing, you know, when they were young.
Yeah, there's a lot of like personal reflection and you know, actual personal remembrances. These aren't, you know, almost everybody talks about the player's actual playing record, but there's a lot of stuff in there that's like, you know, their own connection to this person.
Old Hoss Radbourne did both.
Right, exactly. He had a very personal connection to Parisian Bob Carruthers.
There's a list of 40 plus people. You can find it at hallofnearlygreat.com, which should be easy to remember as long as you haven't turned off the podcast by now, since that's also the name of the book. But that's why it's kind of tough for me to just list off a bunch of the people who are in it, because my brain is just assaulted by 40 plus people, and I'm like, who did things? Who wrote things? I love all of them, and I'm not just saying that. I think the book was really good, front to back. You know whose essays were terrible? Mark Normandin's.
Mark Normandin's essays were solid. They were quite solid.
Yeah, I disagree. They were just they were the worst.
Well, you should mention who you wrote about. You wrote up Brett Saberhagen, and you wrote about, I'll let you say the other one, because I already said one.
Ray Lankford.
And the Ray Lankford essay is great because it kind of serves also as the introduction to the book, because, you know, the Ray Lankford wing of the Hall of Fame or whatever. Was it the Ray Lankford wing of the Hall of Fame, or is the Ray Lankford wing of, okay, yeah. It is kind of, you know, that's the name that inspires the whole thing.
Yeah, that was a pet project of mine back in 2005 or so, when Beyond the Box Score first got going, and I was running things over there. That was a case of me not feeling like doing my schoolwork in college and wanting to look through the Total Baseball Encyclopedia and Davenport translations instead of whatever it was I wasn't attending. Yeah, so Lankford was kind of the beginning of this before there was, you know, this book project, before there was even the site project named after Ray Lankford. That was kind of the thing that got me going on this whole thing. You know, looking back at these players who just didn't get enough attention. As for Saberhagen, that was personal in a different way, because he had, I think, a season that best described who Brett Saberhagen was, you know, when I was getting my baseball consciousness, not just remembering certain moments from seasons, but, you know, the season I first, you know, my interest just peaked in every single way possible and pretty much made me a baseball lifer.
And that's exactly, for those who are listening, that again, the three of you who haven't seen or read or anything of the book yet, that's exactly what you wrote about. That's, you know, you didn't, that's not your reason for writing and then you wrote something else. Like, that's what you wrote about, was the sort of coming to consciousness as like a Red Sox fan, as opposed to kind of a general baseball fan.
That was like the shortened Twitter version of the 3,000 words I wrote.
Yeah, the Saberhagen was in the there's kind of two poles, as I think I've described, although that's not entire, it's not true at all. Like, when I actually looked at the word counts on all of these, it really just kind of runs the gamut from about 1,100 words up to Goldman-esque, and yours was toward the Goldman pole, but not still, I think, 60%. How many Goldmans? 0.6 Goldmans. Goldman, of course, for those, again, now I keep doing this as if people know who people are, but this is Stephen Goldman, formerly of Baseball Prospectus and briefly of the Bleacher Report, and now with SBN, happily, and Pinstripe.
Because we are the Borg.
You are the Borg. Pinstripe Alley or Bible or whatever it's currently called and will in the future be called, but what is
like
the Yankees
far
blog
more personality,
there.
Personality, though.
Sorry?
So we're Borg with far more personality, though.
I don't know the first thing about the Borg, so I have no idea if they have personality or not.
If the Borg had GIFs, they would have taken over, much like we would. I've said too much.
But I think maybe you should do this, do a sort of meta thing. Maybe I should do a meta thing and post a Borg GIF, like Picard, like, as though, I don't know. Like, that's the only
Picard
thing I know about the
Borg. Picard face-palming, double face-palming while the Borg cube is coming.
There you go. That'll work. The double face-palm Picard is, like, my one entry point for Next Generation. So from here, things sort of devolved into talk of Star Trek and Vern Troyer and Angel. So I've done you the favor of cutting all of that. In return, you can do me the favor of visiting the Hall of Nearly Great, purchasing the book that Mark was talking about. It'll go on sale on July 18th. So that is all for episode 16 of the Beanball Podcast, and I will talk to you again next time.